presentado por Aguas Andinas.
Bienvenidos a una nueva edición de La Mesa, ¿no? Es una edición especial porque me van a escuchar hablar en inglés. Tengo como invitado a un economista muy distinguido, Gabriel Zucman. Es economista académico de la Universidad de California en Berkeley. También es director del Instituto Tributario Europeo y es colega y ha escrito varios de los libros y research de Thomas Piketty sobre desigualdad. Así que ahora voy a hablar en inglés, pero van a tener traducción. Mr. Zucman, thank you very much for being in our program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
The reason we invited you, as we were speaking before the interview, is that you gave a presentation last week at the G20 meeting in Brazil, in which you advocate or proposed, to make it simple, to tax the super rich. No, to pay at least 2% of taxes, and for that you propose that it should be a global court, a global deal, and this will it will be able to recaudar, to forget the word in English, but anyway, to get in taxes huge amount of money. No, it would target about 3,000 billionaires. And the argument you make under it is that this will allow to finance a lot of things that are currently undermining the concept of democracy, especially in Western societies. Can you explain to us your proposal so our audience can understand it a bit more clearly than the way I explained it?
Absolutely, yes. I think we need a coordinated minimum tax on the super rich, meaning if you're very rich, you should pay a minimum amount of tax each and every year. And to be concrete, the proposal that I formulated, which is one among many proposals to implement this idea, is to take global billionaires and to say, well, for each of them, each global billionaire should pay in income tax each year at least the equivalent of 2% of their wealth. And so when I say billionaires, it's, dollar billionaire. And so someone who has, let's say, $100 billion in wealth should pay at least $2 billion in income tax each year. Some of them do already pay $2 billion or more, 2% of their wealth or more. And so for them, nothing would change. But for the vast majority of billionaires, they pay very little in tax today. And that's really the starting point of that proposal. We've had revelations, for instance, in the US by the US media ProPublica a few years ago about the tax payments of people like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk. And you see in those revelations that they pay sometimes zero income tax or just a negligible amount of tax. And so what my proposal implies is that instead of paying zero, they should pay at least 2% of their wealth. And the problem, this is a proposal that's supposed to address one very specific problem, the lack of progressivity of our current tax systems. Beyond those case studies that I mentioned, there is a growing body of evidence of academic work that shows in many countries that the ultra wealthy, the super rich, have much lower effective tax rates than the rest of the population. And the reason for that is well understood. When you're very rich, it's easy to structure your wealth such that this wealth is not going to generate a lot of taxable income. Sometimes it will generate just zero taxable income. So to put it differently, the income tax fails to tax the very rich. And that's why we need this common minimum tax expressed as a fraction of wealth to address that issue.
How much, I saw different figures, how much do you expect, based on the research you did, how much do you expect to raise, and how are you going to, how would that money be distributed according to how much each country raises? Could you explain a little bit more of that?
Absolutely. So in the Global Tax Evasion Report 2024 that the EU Tax Observatory that I direct released last year, we estimated that such a 2% minimum tax on global billionaires would generate about $250 billion in additional tax revenue globally. That's a lot of money. How much, How big is $250 billion? Well, look, according to the best estimates that we have, developing countries need an additional $500 billion annually in tax revenues to face the challenges of climate change. And so we can get half of that money with just this relatively modest 2% minimum tax on billionaires. Now, okay, which countries should get the money is not something that I've been discussing so far, you know, in my proposal, you know, at the G20 or in our report. I really think this is something for the international community to discuss. So the hope, you know, of this proposal and that speech at the G20 finance ministers meeting in São Paulo a few days ago, the point of all of that is to start a conversation, you know, just not to end it, but to start a new phase of international discussions about such a common minimum tax on the very rich. And to be clear, there are different ways that the revenues could be allocated across countries. You know, you can take at least two perspectives. Well, you can say, well, look, people who have become very rich, who have become billionaires, it's in part at least because they've benefited from certain public goods and services that their residence country provided to them, like education, like healthcare, like infrastructure. And so from that perspective, it can make sense to say that at least some of the revenues should go to the countries where the billionaires live, or at least where they have built their wealth. But you can take another perspective, which is to say that, look, you know, those billionaires that derive their wealth from owning businesses that have access to global markets. And also they emit carbon that contribute to global warming. And so from that perspective, at least some of the revenues should be broadly distributed to all countries, perhaps in proportion to population. All of these perspectives make sense. And again, I hope that in the coming months, we'll have an inclusive international discussion about precisely that type of issues.
The big elephant in the room is, how do you enforce that? Because capital is global. It flees when it sees that it's going to have diminishing returns. It goes where they think they can pay the least amount of taxes. And there's an old saying that, no, to make war, you just need one. To make peace, you need both parties. I know you proposed that this should be a coordinated effort. In practice, how do you, and you know the players and the rich, they have armies of lawyers and accountants and, you know, consultants and lobbyists. How realistic is it that we get a global agreement in which at least part of the big countries or the important countries will follow and adopt this?
I'm optimistic for one simple reason, which is that 5 years ago, the notion that there could be a common minimum tax on the profits of multinational companies was deemed utopian. And people had the same arguments. They said, look, you know, the big multinational firms, they have armies of lobbyists and lawyers, and they will make sure that there is never an international agreement on a minimum tax for profits. But in 2021, 140 countries and territories agreed on a 15% minimum tax for multinational firms. And so we now know that such forms of international cooperation are possible. We know that international tax competition is not a law of nature. It's a choice, and we can make other choices collectively. We can choose cooperation over competition. Now, I'm not naive. You know, I don't think that we will have a truly global agreement on the taxation of the super rich, you know, anytime soon. But what's really important to understand is that we don't need all countries to join such an agreement for such a policy to be effective. And the best proof of that is that the US actually has not ratified the minimum tax on multinational firms, and yet this tax is happening. It has started to be implemented in about 30 countries this year. It will be implemented in Chile most likely next year, and gradually in more than 100 countries. And what makes this work is that the countries that apply the minimum tax have the right to tax the profits of multinational companies in countries that don't apply the minimum tax, such that these firms also face a 15% minimum tax rate. In other words, the countries that are part of the agreement have the right to collect the taxes that some countries might choose not to collect. That already exists. It's in the global minimum tax of multinational firms. And so what I'm saying is that we could apply that very same logic to the taxation of very high net worth individuals, making it possible to have a well-functioning agreement, even with less than full participation, even with imperfect cooperation. What matters is you need a critical mass of countries. And this could be a group of, you know, Latin American countries, European countries. You know, you can imagine any coalition of countries, but you need a critical mass of countries to implement that tax. You don't need global agreement.
In Chile was a very touchy issue at the beginning of the current government of President Boric when the first draft of the tax reform was going to impose a tax on the rich. And there's been a capital flight in Chile over the last 4 or 5 years that only recently started to, and which was unusual for Chile, in which something that is compared to the rest of Latin America in general. And when you made this proposal last week in Brazil, the same ghost arrived, you know, that there would be a restart of capital flight if Chile would join. And the argument being made was, what stops some of these super rich to leave Chile with their capital and move to, you know, the Bahamas or even in Switzerland or different, you know, countries that have a different tax regime, and maybe they will not, even though you get a critical mass, maybe they will rich, they will go and say, okay, you know, I'm going to go and move to Malta, although technically, no, I don't need to be there more than 90 days. I know in practical terms, how do you address those concerns?
Yes, in two ways. So first of all, let me stress that, yes, today nothing stops those wealthy people from moving abroad to avoid taxes. I agree with that. But it's a choice that we make, and we can make other choices. We could make two other choices. Number one, we could say that if someone has been a tax resident in a country for a long time, so for instance, someone has been a tax resident in Chile for 40, 50 years and has become wealthy in Chile and now chooses to move to Malta or to some low tax country, then Chile will keep taxing that person after they've left, as if they have not moved out of the country for a number of years, you know, after their departure, maybe 5 or 10 or 15 years, we can discuss. But today the choice that's made in Chile, like in most other countries, is to say, well, as soon as someone leaves, then that person has no tax to pay anymore to their previous country. But, you know, we could do differently. So that's number one. Number two, we could say,
by the way, that's very similar to the FIFA rule, which you pay the transfer fee of a millionaire footballer in Europe, and part of that money goes to the club that player in Africa or Asia or in Latin America was from. I never thought of it that way. That's interesting. Sorry, I interrupted
you.
Similarities.
It has similarities with that, but it's even more comprehensive. It's even more powerful because the idea, you know, some countries already have some kind of exit taxes. When you move out, you have to pay a tax at the time of the exit or the time of the transfer, so to speak. But what I'm proposing is more comprehensive and better than that. It's to say that after you've moved, you will keep being treated as a resident of your origin country for some years. And so any new income that you earn after you've moved will remain taxable in your origin country, with, of course, tax credits to offset any tax that you might pay in your new country, so that if you move to a high tax country, then you have nothing more to pay to your origin country. But if you move to a tax haven where you pay zero, then you would have to pay more taxes in your origin country on any new income that you earn. So you can do that. And number two, what you can do is you could say, well, someone who is a billionaire and lives in Malta, you know, that person obviously has assets outside of Malta, you know, perhaps some assets are in Chile, perhaps that person owns a company that has factories in Chile or that has, you know, access to the Chilean market, that has customers in Chile. And so what Chile could say is, look, you know, to the extent that you derive some of your wealth from Chile, you know, in terms of market access, in terms of presence for the businesses that you own, or in terms of assets that you own, then you would have to pay some tax in Chile. The important point that's really essential to understand is that tax competition is not some kind of law of nature. You know, it's really a choice. And we've made certain choices, you know, since the 1980s, but those choices are not working. They are leading to a race to the bottom with capital taxation. They are leading to a situation of tax injustice where the very rich pay much less tax relative to their ability to pay than the rest of the population. And this is not sustainable. You know, this can only undermine our democratic institutions. And what I want to say is that it is urgent to invent a new regulation of globalization and a new form of multilateralism that would put at the center of international economic cooperation the fight against those forms of harmful competition and those forms of injustice that otherwise can corrode democratic societies.
Well, that was the last question I was going to go now, is exactly that. You, in part of your argument, and I've read other things you've written, is that this inequality is undermining the fabric of what, I don't think you use the word Western societies, but Western democracies, or democracy as, or what, liberal democracies. And if we don't do something, we would end up with some sort of system in which you will have so much discontent that the very nature of democracy will be undermined. Is that a fair summary of what you say?
Look, yes. I think, look, taxation is probably the tax system is probably the most important institution in modern democratic societies. In modern democracies, governments collect 30, 40, 50, sometimes up to 50% of national income in taxes. And this tax collection funds the public goods and services that are really the key engine of economic growth, education, healthcare, infrastructure. And making that system work in practice, you know, it's a lot of income that's taxed and spent. Ensuring that this is done fairly is absolutely vital for the sustainability of our democracies.
Okay, Mr. Zucman, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, Zucman, thank you very much. Muchas gracias. And I will finish in Spanish, just bear with me. Esta ha sido una entrevista con el economista francés Gabriel Zucman. Este ha sido un nuevo episodio especial en inglés para la mesa. Mr. Zucman, muchas gracias.
Thank you. Muchas gracias.